We might be in the final quarter of the football season, but that doesn't mean winning season is over. Oh, no. With MyBookie and its cash-out system, you are in control of how you bet and how you win for the rest of the season. Season win totals, parlays, points totals. If you're on the right side, you can get out while the getting is good. Cash out. Use the funds on other bets. Or just let it ride for the chance at a bigger payday. Any way you slice it, you are in control. To get started, go to mybookie.ag now. That's mybookie.ag. Register for an account for free. When you're ready, make your first deposit. And remember to use promo code ZABE. That's Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo. And grab a welcome bonus on the house. That's promo code ZABE to claim your deposit bonus. The season is running out, but winning season has just begun. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere at mybookie.ag. Free is a zero tobacco nicotine pouch designed for people who want a simple, hassle-free way to enjoy nicotine without smoke, vapor, or the smell. Everything about Free is engineered for ease. Fast flavor, fast effect, and fast delivery straight to your door. The strength range goes from 3 milligrams all the way up to 15 milligrams. So whether you're looking for something on the lighter side or you want maximum strength, they've got you covered. Flavors, mint, wintergreen, watermelon, which is new, plus lush, sweet, and original. Enough variety that picking a flavor feels like picking a mood. Available in single tins, mega packs, and bundles for those who like to commit. The pouches come pre-primed, so flavor and effect hit instantly. No waiting around. They're soft, flexible, sit comfortably, and the whole setup is discreet. Compact tins, zero smoke, zero vapor, perfect for meetings, commutes, or just getting through the day. You can get your instant delivery straight to your door or pick them up whenever you normally get your nicotine. Right now, my listeners can get 20% off their order at freepouch.com. That's F-R-E pouch.com with promo code LISTEN20. That's freepouch.com, F-R-E pouch.com, and use promo code LISTEN20 to get 20% off today. F-R-E, free. Strength you can count on.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays, decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa, got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments, Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels, Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This is the ZabeCast, from the mean streets of McLean, Virginia, to the Harvard of the West, UC Santa Barbara. You got 30 minutes for some honest conversation about sports, life, and more? Well, good. Buckle up and let's go.
Here we go.
All right, so it is the day after, Matt Miller, that the Packers lost Micah Parsons for the year with a blown ACL. How are you holding up, my friend?
Bad. I would describe it as bad.
Really?
I will say I'm a little more hopeful. We are also Christian Watson is alive, which is rare for Christian Watson. And not
right.
to bring the ire of his dad on my ass, but Christian
Tazim
Watson,
Waheed Aliz El Muhammad or whatever his actual name
the guy
is.
Guy struggles to stay on the field, and I was happy to hear that it seems like it doesn't look like he shattered his arm the way he did on Sunday. I would feel much better about the Packers if their end of season schedule wasn't terrible.
Right.
They got to play the Bears, who are going to be rip snorting to rip our asses
out. Oh, they are ready to go.
And then you got to play the Ravens, who are getting better and also have a lot to play for. They
yeah.
could definitely still get into the playoffs. And then they end the season with, I believe, the Vikings, correct?
Yes, the Vikings up indoors under the plastic snow and with a rejuvenated J.J. McCarthy. Who saw the
this week?
Right. He played the Commanders and the Cowboys defenses.
Yeah.
So there
I just...
That.
The Browns loss is looming so hard over the Packers right now, where it's like you had that game against a bad team, quarterbacked by Joe Flacco.
Right.
And you botched it. And if you had that game in your pocket, the end of the season is much less stressful right now. And yes, you'd lose Micah Parsons, but you'd basically be a win away from a playoff berth. And now I believe they've got to win two of the three. And that's tough sledding.
Yeah. Now, how do you feel about the fans, however? The Packer fans that want to say, that's it, game over. Game over, season's over.
Us Wisconsinites do love a little defeatism, and the seasonal affective disorder came early this year.
Do you feel like Wisconsin fans believe they are particularly aggrieved and accursed with bad fate?
I think so, which is funny because we won an NBA Finals less than 5 years
ago. You sure did. And you've won Super Bowls in the last 20, 30 years. So.
But there's the thing of like, oh, they get to the NFC Championship and Rodgers falls apart. Or like, oh, the Brewers would make this big move and the guy would get hurt. Or like they make the NLCS and they lose to, you know, this team, the team that gets hot at the right time. The Arizona Diamondbacks.
You just said it, Miller. You just toned in on it. The guy would get hurt. Ding. Yeah. Like that's the essence of sports fandom. Because every fan base, every team, every sport can say, remember that year? And then the guy that got hurt.
Yes.
That one guy.
If you're not a Wisconsinite, you might... I don't know if this is exclusively a Packers thing, but Packers fans every year are convinced that they are the most hurt team in the NFL. And I think we've put stats behind it, and it's not true. Other teams have been more hurt.
No, it's totally not true.
Packers fans are convinced that their team is more struck by lightning than any other team in the NFL, which is funny because, like, literally, Micah Parsons wasn't even the most notable ACL torn up on Sunday. So.
Right. Well, Packer fans that I found from an outsider's perspective from my 6.5 years in state was that they go from between being entitled because of this amazing run of quarterbacks, Favre to Rodgers to now Love, and people even have a name for it called Entitled Town, that there is an entitlement, sort of a nose in the air amongst Packer fans.
It's not wrong.
And then when things go wrong, they flip all the way over the middle ground and then become the most aggrieved, tortured, woe is us fan base. There is no middle.
And I've been born into it. Like, I've been in the soup my entire life. So I don't know.
Because you're only how old?
I'm 35.
35?
I've always been a Packers fan.
Since the time you were in toddling pants, all you've known is good quarterbacking.
Yeah, all we've known in terms of bad football is like the Ray Rhodes year.
That one year we had Ray Rhodes, you were like...
Bad football. Yeah. And like the one Rodgers-Favre transition year. Like, even the Jordan Love, even his transition year was like, this is a real football team. How fun. We've never had the Browns wandering the desert type football up here.
Right.
So there is this weird entitled nature of Packers fans where they're like, the playoffs are assumed, basically.
In your lifetime, you can count the bad seasons on basically one hand. The Ray Rhodes year. The transition to Rodgers year.
The Rodgers-Favre year.
The year that McCarthy got fired. Year
that one, and then the
last
the
year of Rodgers when before he finally left. Year
there's been very few, like, again, and honestly, we forget them. It's weird that Packers fans, we remember the failed NFC championships far more, like, those stand out far more than the bad football seasons. I think there's been more NFC championship failures than bad football seasons. So, yeah, it's tough, but it's doable. Micah Parsons wasn't the entire team, though he was very, very useful. And hopefully they get some gumption, beat up the Bears, and then life gets a lot easier. But they've made things so much harder for themselves by losing to the Browns and Panthers.
It'd be nice if maybe Rashawn Gary had a sack. Seven games now where he hasn't had a sack or a TFL, and he got paid. Yeah. And he was supposed to thrive opposite number one. Did not happen, hasn't happened, so you better find it, Rashawn.
Either that or Lucas Van Ness is going to have to be the great white that, hope that, that we drafted
guy,
him to be.
That guy is the nicest bust I've ever seen. Like, total bust. You know,
he seems like a great guy. He should do something on the field sometime. It'd be sweet of him.
Right. When he was drafted, they go, just squint. He's TJ Watt from Iowa. They're like,
yeah.
I don't see it, D-Lane. I don't. And three years later, we're like, I still don't see it.
Yeah, he's not even Kirkland brand TJ Watt. No. He's like great value brand TJ Watt. Like,
he looks great shirtless, but does not find himself peeling himself off the quarterback at the bottom of the pile very often.
He tends to be around the play.
Yeah.
A play tends to happen, and then Lucas Van Ness is there, and you're like, oh, did he do something? And then you watch the play again, and you're like, oh, no, he was just in the vicinity of football.
Right. All right, hold that thought. I got to go get something. And I'll be right back. Stand by.
This isn't just a game. It's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Drinking and driving is a decision that will change your whole world. Things will never be the same once you get a DUI, because legal fees and time in court are just the beginning. Getting into a crash is another way your world could be irreversibly changed after drinking and driving. Your vehicle may not be the only thing that gets damaged in that crash. You could face a life-altering injury or even death. But you're not the only one who could face those consequences. Your decision to drink and drive could permanently change someone else's world, whether you injure them or leave their loved ones grieving. The next time you're out drinking, call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or a designated sober driver. Always plan for a safe ride home. The only decision that'll change your world for the better is the decision to call for a sober ride. It's never worth it to drive drunk. Don't risk it. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Go to Dutch.com to get vet care that is always there for just $92 a year.
We might be in the final quarter of the football season, but that doesn't mean winning season is over. Oh no. With MyBookie and its cash out system, you are in control of how you bet and how you win for the rest of the season. Season win totals, parlays, points totals. If you're on the right side, you can get out while the getting is good. Cash out. Use the funds on other bets, or just let it ride for the chance at a bigger payday. Any way you slice it, you are in control. To get started, go to mybookie.ag now. That's mybookie.ag. Register for an account for free. When you're ready, make your first deposit, and remember to use promo code ZABE. That's Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo, and grab a welcome bonus on the house. That's promo code ZABE to claim your deposit bonus. The season is running out, but winning season has just begun. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere at mybookie.ag.
Have a holly jolly Christmas. It's the best time of the year. I don't know if the Packers will make the playoffs, but it would be cool if they did. Have a holly jolly Christmas. Even though I have an ice dam on my gutters. Say hello to friends you know and everyone you meet.
Okay. And we're back. All right, I got a couple other NFL things I wanted to run by you. Then we're going to talk about Christmas movies and Christmas TV shows and specials. and what you consider your personal canon. My wife asked, what does canon mean? Because my older daughter talks about what is or is not canon for all the different franchises she likes. So my daughter knows it, but my wife didn't know it. And I tried to explain it, and I didn't do a very good job. So it'll be up to you, Mr. A Man About Film, to explain what canon is. Okay?
Yeah. Yes. I will keep...
You'll do that.
I will ferment that in my brain. Yeah.
Okay. So two other notable things from the weekend. Philip Rivers... First and foremost, did you see Matt Miller when he slipped on the logo like an old man, fell down, and then most hilariously got up from the logo like an old man? Did you see the highlight?
I didn't see the whole thing.
Oh,
I saw the original slip.
Okay. So when he slipped, hey, look, it can happen, all right? The guy's 5 days off his couch. It happens. But he gets up by going to one knee first, and then he gets up with the other knee. And I was like, oh, I know that move.
You were Leonardo DiCaprio.
I was Leonardo DiCaprio, snapping my finger, pointing at the screen and whistling, going, holy shit, I know what that is.
It was him. He was like looking for a railing to like get a perch on.
He did not spring to his feet as a younger man would have done.
So, I just want the NFL Films audio of that because you just know it was like all-timer groans. Just like, here we go. Oh, boy. Just like all the like, ah, shit. Just the sounds of a man trying to get up from a fall.
Right.
And he hasn't done that in a while.
So that was thing number one. Thing number two is that Shedeur Sanders apparently was given the wrong wristband of plays by the Cleveland Browns and their galaxy brain coaching staff, led by Kevin Stefanski, who should so be fired at the end of this year, if not sooner. Now, how this happens is beyond me because there's supposed to be something called a quality control coach. The quality control coach is in charge of all these little details, like what play sheet are we giving our rookie quarterback, who is good at times but struggles at others. Now, I didn't watch the game, so I can't tell if it was really the play sheet or not, or he just sucked. He threw three interceptions. They weren't all his fault. It was a cold day, whatever. He's a rookie. He's going to have days like this.
Bears are good. Yeah.
Right. But all along, there have been a certain number of quacks out there, at least people I thought were quacks, that said, the Browns are setting him up to fail. The Browns want to sabotage his career. And I've been like, that is the dumbest shit I've ever heard. Where do you get these things? I can't believe, what? They gave him the wrong wristband? Give me that brochure again. I'd like to read more about it. For the first time in my life, Miller, I'm ready to dive in on, maybe something's going on.
I was going to say, I don't like being a grassy knoll person, but
right.
Combine that with the, we're going to sit him for the game-winning two-point conversion that we're going to botch in comical style.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and plus, the fact that he's on the field and he seems like an NFL quarterback, like, obviously there's lots of bumps and bruises to get out of the system there, but, like, he is not Johnny Manziel-ing all over the place. Like, he seems like he belongs.
Sure.
It just all kind of adds up to, what was Cleveland doing here? Like, and it does make you think, like, tell me more about the club. Tell me more about the Kevin Stefanski is trying to ruin Shedeur club. Right. And what his membership dues.
Right. So I thought about a parallel in pop culture and my brain came to me and said, oh, you know what? Because I started thinking quality control. I'm like, this is like when Creed got Debbie Brown fired at the paper mill in The Office. Do you remember this episode?
I do. This is quite the pull.
So for those that don't remember, Creed Bratton, who was the weirdest dude in the entire ensemble cast.
Potential serial killer in The Office.
Right. Phenomenal character. Nobody really knew what he did, but he was technically the quality assurance manager. And so his job was to go to the paper mill once a year to do an inspection, because they're the ones Dunder Mifflin buying paper in bulk from the mill. Well, one shipment of paper went out with a obscene watermark, like a dick, as a watermark.
It was a person with a giant penis or something.
Right,
like that.
Right.
Yeah.
As a watermark in the paper, and it really offended their biggest client. And they were going to lose their biggest client. So suddenly, Creed, who spends all day in that office doing nothing, is having to do something. He swings into action. He then calls the paper mill and says, who was out the week of ... when Dunder Mifflin made the order? Found the name of some woman he didn't even know by the name of Debbie Brown, and then blamed the screw up on Debbie Brown, knowing she had no alibi because she was gone the week they ordered the paper. They end up firing this Debbie Brown, and Creed, to further sell the entire ruse, said to his coworkers, yeah, it's really sad what happened to Debbie Brown up there at the paper mill, but I've gotten a card and I'm taking up a collection to help her out. And Creed took cash from everyone in the office. And the closing scene in the episode was him dumping the card into the garbage can and pocketing the money with no remorse about throwing her under the bus. That's the Browns right now. Somebody at the Browns is going to throw somebody else under the bus for this entire Shedeur Sanders fiasco.
Hold on a second. Debbie Brown. Cleveland Browns. Oh. I'm turning into the Carol It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia meme where he's like pointing at the wall. And it's like, it all leads to Carol.
It all leads to Carol, exactly.
It all leads to the Browns.
Okay, that said, let's get to Christmas holiday cheer. So I endeavored to log on to one of my many streaming services that our family pays for and get some holiday cheer. I was instantly met with the wide array of different sliders and options and toggles and scrolls and ways that the content gods lay out all the stuff you can choose from.
Real Housewives super fan collection.
Right.
The Office super collection.
Like, what do I go to? What's trending? Do I search for a holiday section? Do I go here to the latest offerings? How do I just get the holiday stuff? That's all I want. And I quickly was overwhelmed with the paradox of choice, which is the more choice consumers tend to be given, the less satisfied they become because of FOMO. You're like, I can't make a decision. You get decision fatigue, right?
This is why the Netflix, the original movies never really do all that well, because if given a choice on a Friday night between popping on something new and, I don't know, throwing on New Girl again, most times people choose to watch New Girl again.
Right. So I then went and did the most dad thing ever. I went to Grok and I said over and over to different outlets, Netflix, tell me what Christmas content, parentheses, movies and TV are on Netflix. Return. And I would get something like this, a whole sheet of explanations with not
you
just the
titles.
I printed it out.
Grok. That is not designed for that.
Listen, of course I had to go cut paste into Evernote, print from Evernote so it came out nice and clean, paste and match style.
Sounds
Matt Miller.
Exhausting. Always I'm paste. Exhausted hearing this from you.
Okay. So we got Netflix. We got Paramount. Don't screen grab and grab
you
my
printed
passwords.
Them all Peacock. Out.
I've got Apple TV. I've got Amazon Prime. I've
Same.
Got
All
Disney
of these will
Plus.
Be out of date
Da-da!
In like 3 days.
Da-da! I got Hulu as well. So I went
Same.
And I went and I made sure to check and double check and reset passwords when needed all of our streaming services. And I printed them out and presented to my wife in triumphant dad fashion. Here you go, honey. All the Christmas content as it's laid out amongst all of the streaming services.
Zabe, that's a small Amazonian forest you murdered for listings of Christmas movies that, A, you will not check after December 26th.
You're right.
And B, will be out of date the next time you want to use them.
Okay, but listen, I wanted control, Miller. I wanted to
and
feel...
And also use Grok for this. Grok is not a good resource for this information.
Well, who
Justwatch.com.
Is?
Justwatch.com. Justwatch.com is the place to go.
Okay, but I wanted it to analyze what are the best and most popular. And I think Grok is better than your average bear, right? Without me knowing. I'd have to call you and then go, hey, Miller, Does this count as a really classic Christmas movie or special?
Zabe,
or?
I will take on that duty. I will. You can have a little emergency phone number being like, is this movie good for me to watch? And I can be like, no, don't do that. Don't watch The Family Stone.
Okay. So here are the movies and TV specials I've grouped into bundles. And you can tell me if I'm missing anything, which I'm sure I probably am. Of the TV specials, Charlie Brown, The Grinch, Frosty, Rudolph are your Fab Four.
Yeah,
Santa Claus is Coming to Town is like the fifth Beatle. And then there's a couple others that are offshoots and spinoffs like The Year Without Christmas with the Heat Miser. And the Heat Miser and the Cold Miser? They both misers? Heat Miser and Cold Miser.
I'm Mr. Snow.
Snow Miser. Heat Miser, Snow Miser. Twas the Night Before Christmas, which was a Rankin-Bass animation, so it has the same vibe of the late 60s. It involved mice in a clock in a house that celebrated Twas the Night Before Christmas.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. And then, of course, if you want a cult classic, you got The Nightmare Before Christmas, which is Tim Burton, which is animated.
That was not a TV movie. That is a movie.
Okay, put that aside. In terms of classic movies, A Christmas Carol.
It's also not a Christmas movie.
All right, Christmas is a Halloween movie with a dash of Christmas.
Bing bong.
Thank you. Classics involve Christmas Carol, It's a Wonderful Life.
Which Christmas Carol?
Well.
This is important.
Okay. Last week, I popped on and watched the OG 1938, the very first Christmas Carol that was ever filmed in black and white. And it was the guy who played Ebenezer Scrooge was a stand-in for the guy who had been doing it on radio for 7 years and was a beloved Scrooge telling this Christmas classic. He had injured himself right before they were about to shoot the movie, so he couldn't do it. So they had some other guy
Reginald
fill in.
Owen.
Yeah, Reginald Owen was the OG guy. And then they had somebody else stand in and play the part, and they said that he nailed it. And they had an awkward dub-in of Reginald Owen introducing the movie, saying, well, this next story you're going to hear is about a fella who realizes he's on the wrong path in life.
This is a very early, 1930s. Like, you should have had a little organ next to you playing the music next to you, like da la 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 la.
I want a little bit of kudos from you, a man about film. For me, Mr. New School, going back and actually watching uninterrupted a 1938 black and white movie.
I'm not wearing a cap, but I am tipping my cap to you, good sir.
Okay.
That takes some doing. And it's hard to find older movies on streaming. It's
right.
Netflix, I think their oldest movie is like 1978 or something like that. Like it's pretty hard to find the old stuff.
Yeah. So I watched that and I then realized, oh my God, there have been so many iterations of Christmas Carol. Which one do you think is the best?
Muppet Christmas Carol.
Which, as I sent you a link, is not streamable at this moment.
I believe that's a different Muppet Christmas special.
Oh, really?
I think the one you sent is like a Muppets Christmas Vacation or something like that. Muppet Christmas Carol is on Disney Plus and is a triumph of the human spirit. I love Muppet Christmas Carol so much. It makes me laugh. It makes me cry. There's like shots in it where you're like, why is this so impressive for a Muppet movie? Michael Caine is like putting in the work in that movie as Ebenezer Scrooge. Like, no one should be working as hard as he is in that movie.
Michael Caine was the human Scrooge version. Where how many humans were in the movie surrounded by the Muppets?
I think it's just Michael Caine. No, there's Michael Caine and like the younger Ebenezer Scrooge. And I think for the sake of not breaking kids' brains, I believe the woman he's in love with is a real female actress too.
Okay.
Because it would be weird if he was like falling in love with like Miss Piggy and kids are like, and the parents are like, don't ask questions.
Okay, so Christmas Carol, Wonderful Life, White Christmas, Miracle on 34th, Polar Express, Christmas Story.
Oh, get out of town.
Hold on. Polar Express, Christmas Story, Home Alone, Elf, Christmas vacation. I've kind of walked you through what I consider the canon list, the essential list of movies from old to new. You have some new school movies that have come out recently. Spirited, which was an Apple TV deal with Will Ferrell and Ryan Reynolds.
And Ryan
it's a
Reynolds,
musical. It's
yeah.
not terrible, I don't think.
It's not bad.
Noel with the lovely Anna Kendrick, which is a bit empty, but I still like looking at Anna Kendrick for 2 hours at a time.
A rave review.
There's a movie called Office Christmas Party that I found a bit entertaining. There is
yeah,
eight.
That's a good way to describe that movie. It's
a bit
entertaining.
There's
it's
eight. Speaking of bit, there's
entertaining.
8-Bit Christmas came out in the last 5 years. Do you remember 8-Bit Christmas? That harkened back
Neil
to
Patrick Harris. I want to say
yes.
Yeah, people have been saying that that's it got like dumped on HBO Max, and people are like, no, it was actually pretty good.
Yeah, and then there's Christmas adjacent new school movies like The Family Stone, like The Holiday, like Last Holiday. There's mm-hmm. multiple ones pretty much playing on that. Then you've got your comedy Christmas movies like Four Christmases is funnier than shit. But because it's set in San Francisco, there's not a fleck of snow to be seen. So you don't get the warm, fuzzy feel good of
that's the
yeah.
It's the tricky balance with a Christmas movie, and that's why that not that specific element of Four Christmases, but that's why that movie doesn't work for me, is that you need that balance of like bitter pill that we all know that the holidays bring out, but you need the warmth and the sentimentality too. And for me, the Four Christmases is just a little too bitter and a little too, I'm not getting the Christmas warmth.
Well, it's
it.
Kind of so, empty because they were, it was Jennifer Aniston and what's his name?
It's Vince Vaughn and
Vince Vaughn.
Reese Witherspoon.
Yeah, Vince Vaughn, Reese Witherspoon. They were a childless, dual-income couple in the Bay Area who just wanted to go on vacation somewhere warm for Christmas and didn't give a shit about Christmas or kids or their families for whom they didn't like. But then their flight got canceled and they were forced to spend Christmas at all four of their parents because both their parents had been divorced. And wackiness does ensue.
It does.
And the Robert Duvall Christmas visit at their house, oh my God, with Jon Favreau, to me that's one of the all-time funniest movie scenes ever.
Funniest movie? Wow.
Well,
that's
funny.
The high praise for Four Christmases.
You don't think when they're installing the satellite dish and Robert Duvall as the hard-ass old-school dad is yelling at him, and then his brothers are challenging him to wrestling matches in the living room and it's getting all rough and violent, that wasn't funny?
I think that's an enjoyable part of that movie.
Okay.
I think that I chortle at that part and then the rest happens.
Okay. And then we have some recent dark Christmas movies. Bad Santa is the most popular and successful dark Christmas movies.
We don't violent, speak of Bad Santa 2.
Violent Night came along.
Fun movie.
A sort of a slasher. That's the assassin one where Santa's an assassin.
Like, what if Santa was John Wick? Like, basically, like, what if Santa was delivering gifts and he showed up at a house where a bunch of Russian mobsters were like holding a family hostage and Santa tries to save them? That movie is a good time. The guy from David Harbour from Stranger Things is in it. If you're into a violent Santa movie, that's a good time.
Okay. And then there is Krampus.
There's always Krampus.
Do I recall you saying you liked Krampus?
I want to love Krampus is my stance on Krampus. Krampus is for those who don't know, this is a horror movie about like the evil Santa Claus,
right.
The Santa who shows up for bad kids and punishes them.
Right.
And I remember when that movie was coming out, I was like, this is going to be my favorite movie of the year. Like, this sounds great. Evil Santa, like, and the tone of the movie is just not quite right. It should be a lot more fun than it is, but I think you could do a lot worse. I actually watched Silent Night, Deadly Night recently, which is a classic schlocky slasher movie from the 80s that got like boycotted because it's about like a kid who like after watching a Santa Claus kill his parents as a child and after getting abused in this like orphanage, like snaps as an adult and goes on a killing spree as Santa Claus with an axe, killing people on Christmas. It's really a scummy movie.
Oh my God.
It is a unpleasant, scummy, like degenerate movie. But it has this cult following because of exactly those reasons. It is the anti-Christmas Christmas movie. I would much rather watch Krampus than that again. But it is that tough toe to walk of like, how funny do you make your horror movie about Krampus?
Yeah.
You know, how scary do you make your inherently goofy Christmas horror movie?
Yeah.
And it's a hard tiptoe. Krampus is almost there, but not quite. Give me Violent Night over it.
All right. And then we have.
Or Black Christmas. Do you know of Black Christmas?
No.
It's basically the first slasher movie. It was directed by the guy who did A Christmas Story, and it's about like four sorority girls just like in their house on Christmas, and a psychopath picks them off one by one. And it is like brutal, and like that is that it, and it's like the slasher movie that inspired all the slashers after it.
Wow.
But it is, yeah, and it's okay. So crazy that guy was like, yeah, I'm going to make one of the most beloved Christmas movies too, and also Baby Geniuses. Oh, my career makes no sense.
Yeah, and then there is Die Hard. I don't hate Die Hard. I am not in the cult of it being a Christmas movie.
If you are, 100% a Christmas movie.
Fine. They're wonderful. Have fun. Wear the sweater. Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker. You know what? Merry Christmas.
I was literally wearing my shirt yesterday that says, it's not Christmas until Hans Gruber falls off the Nakatomi Plaza.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
It's 100% a Christmas movie, and I know it's like become cliche now to be like, did you know Die Hard is a Christmas movie? But it's 100% a Christmas movie. It's what makes that movie great, and what makes that movie so rewatchable is the joy of that movie. And the movie ends with Let It Snow, Let It Snow, Let It Snow. It takes place at a Christmas party. It's at least a little, it's arguably more Christmassy than It's a Wonderful Life.
Okay, it could be 9% Christmas by volume. By volume of shots and imagery, it's 9% Christmas, which is more than a lot of people think.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Ho, ho, ho. Okay. I have a gun now.
So, I have a movie that is a classic and beloved, and I will say that I think it is barely a Christmas movie.
Ooh, I'm intrigued.
Home Alone.
This is a fair argument.
Home Alone is a wonderful burglary caper and a stunt movie type of deal. It has a light. It happens in and around Christmas. What are the Christmas scenes that Kevin McAllister is involved in? What are the Christmas themes that are drawn out in the movie? What is the Christmas message of Home Alone? I'll hang up and listen to your answer off the air.
I was going to say, I think him visiting the singers at the church.
Okay.
Like singing, like I think that's carrying a lot of weight. And I think it has a Christmas vibe, I think, is a lot
it
of
does.
It. It's like the bustling house,
yes.
the slick outdoors. It has that Midwestern Christmas energy. But you're right that it is not a movie that like you put on and it's like, I'm screaming Christmas right here. Like, again, arguably Die Hard has more Christmas stuff
than
in
Home
it.
Alone.
It is more.
Right.
Just saying.
By the way, the Home Alone house, 671 Lincoln Avenue in Winnetka, Illinois, suburb just north of Chicago. I lived across the highway, across the Edens, over in Northbrook for a number of years when I worked at One-on-One Sports. And I knew how Tony and swank those neighborhoods are and were near the lake. And the real estate value on that house, that massive colonial, that five-bedroom colonial, is I'm going to look it up right now, but it's expensive.
Imagine paying that much for a house that you are going to have intruders constantly.
Because
people root all the time. Like people like trampling on your property, getting photos, like probably trying to peek inside and see if it still looks like the house and like all that stuff. And it's like you paid so much money to be annoyed all the time. It's like paying to have the phone number from Jenny.
867-5309.
Like, imagine seeking out that number and being like, well, surely this won't annoy me every day of my life.
Right. Guess what the Home Alone house sold for in 2012? 2012.
1.2 million, I'll say.
1.58 million. It sold again this past January, just about a year ago. What do you think it sold for?
1.61 million.
Yeah, underbid by a little bit. $5.5 million.
They have to be turning it into a museum then, right? Like, you have to be, to recoup the money on that, you have to be, like, opening up and selling tickets and being like, welcome to the John Hughes Shrine.
Do you know do you know the number of bedrooms and bathrooms? Take a guess.
Not enough. Not enough for $5 million. 7 bedrooms, 9 baths.
Five bedrooms, 6 bathrooms. How many square feet?
Not enough.
9,000. While renovated, the owners kept the memorable foyer, staircase, and formal living and dining rooms intact. New additions include a home theater and a basketball court.
Oh, a basketball court.
Oh, okay. Dear. So
we've left out something important in this conversation, though.
Yes.
Babe. Where do we include Hallmark movies in this conversation?
They're not included because there are so many of them. Unless there's one or two that stand out above the rest, then they're Xerox copies. Basically, they've been spoofed. I had to tell my sister, I go, have you ever seen the Simpsons spoof of the Hallmark movies? She goes, no. And I go, oh yeah, they did a whole Simpsons episode. It's called a Simpsons Hallmark Christmas or something like that. And they made fun of the whole production of these movies. There's also a Family Guy one, which I just watched, called Family Guy Hallmark Christmas. And it is hilariously Family Guy-esque, both to eviscerate the tropes in that movie and the cliches, and to add a dark twist. And sorry to give you a spoiler alert, but Lois ends up quitting her Manhattan job, where she's CEO of Big Pie, because she was going to small town USA to steal the recipe for the pie shop that Homer...
To Blueberry, Colorado or whatever. Right,
exactly. And she changes her mind. She goes running out of the skyscraper in her high heels, slips on ice, does a full wipeout, breaks all her... Like the typical Family Guy over-exaggerated body damage type scene.
Yeah.
And then the next smash cut is her driving a wheelchair with her mouth... as a quadriplegic back to the pie shop in small town USA where Peter is there going, well, you know, Smallville is not very ADA compliant. It's just a lot. And basically saying, yeah, now that you're crippled, I don't want to fall in love with you. And scene.
Oh, that does sound rich. And like the thing is, like, they bring it on themselves, Hallmark. Like, they truly do just print these things out, just insanity, just copy paste. They've tried diversifying the stories a little bit in recent years because they have competition now, because Netflix makes their in-house Hallmark brand movie. Like, they're not Hallmark movies, but they've got the same vibe and arguably even bigger names. And all the, I think, what's the Great American Channel has Candace Cameron Bure, and she does her kind of Hallmarky movies there. Like, it is tough sledding out there now if you are in the business of making these Hallmark movies. And they killed the Christmas movie. Like, that is why we don't get the annual movie in theaters, the Christmas movie that comes
really,
out.
Really? The widespread theatrical release got killed by Hallmark and other copycats?
Yeah, because audiences were like, yeah, we can watch
this
a
at
corny
home.
I can watch a corny Christmas movie at home. Doesn't even matter. I don't even have to pay attention. And so we kind of, like, Hallmark kind of killed that off because that audience is like, well, I got a lot to do at home. Do I want to go to a theater? Or do I just want to put on, you know, a Holly Jolly Christmas Part 7 and starring Lacey Chabert for the 14th time and just watch that in the background and get the gist of what's happening in the movie?
All right. So I have a list here of stuff I viewed for the holidays. I'm going to try to fill this card up with all the kind of goodness that is Christmas content. I've watched A Christmas Carol, the OG version, 1938. I watched Christmas with the Cranks, which was a poor choice.
Another bitter Christmas movie.
Tim Allen, you know what it was? It was, I think it had to be made shortly after the success of Christmas Vacation, and it was meant to be a flip side.
I think it's
later
side. Than that.
Well,
I think
okay.
It's 2004.
Okay. Well, either way, it was supposed to be a flip side look at the anti Clark Griswold, because Tim Allen plays the suburban Chicago married homeowner who decides, I'm tired of Christmas. I want to go away on a cruise, and convinces his wife, Jamie Lee Curtis, to go along with it, even though she's homesick for their only daughter who has gone off to the Peace Corps for Christmas. We'll miss her first Christmas ever. So they go about for the better part of December saying, we're not doing Christmas, to all their friends and family and the neighborhood. And you had Dan Aykroyd play the neighborhood guy who's like enforcing, you got to get your Christmas decorations up. And
yeah.
Every house is like a giant Frosty that they put on top of their house. And so there's
like a
so
weird,
many,
like Christmas fascism thing where it's like, if your house isn't decorated, you're going to be kicked out of the neighborhood.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And so the whole movie to me, as I'm watching it going, all right, there's no genuine funny scenes like there are in Christmas Vacation.
Yeah.
And you're just stealing scene after scene. There's a scene mm-hmm. where the power goes out because there's too many light strings plugged into one outlet. Duh, where have I seen that one before? There's a scene where Tim Allen slides off the roof and nearly kills himself trying to put up decorations. Where have I seen that one before? And so it was just a cheap, it was not very well made. But
yeah,
and it's off my list.
You want someone to root for in a Christmas movie, in a holiday movie across the board. Like, you want to believe that there's some good in these people. And if I remember that movie, like, everyone's just kind of unpleasant to be around. Like, Tim Allen and Jamie Lee Curtis are bickering all the time. Dan Aykroyd and the rest of the neighbors are, like, crazy people. And you're just like, where's the normal human in this movie?
Right.
Where is my grounding that there's a sane reality here?
Yeah, and Jamie Lee Curtis was a total bitch. That's the other thing, too. She had no depth as a character, where she was just the housewife who just wanted things the way she wanted them, making her husband go out in the pouring rain to go get her precious, like, you know, cookie mix at the store.
Yeah. There's some weird, they're like, people are so specific in the movie. It's like, you have to, they have a, like a special Santa that they have to put out, and like the kids start going crazy about it. It's such a strange movie. Again, the alchemy of a good Christmas movie, just if you just, a pinch in the wrong direction in either way, immediate fruitcake.
Yeah.
Immediate, the thing is like, throw it out. No one wants to eat it.
And then the other guy in there was, and I think he's passed, but you've seen him in all these movies, Emmett Walsh. The
oh,
old,
yeah, M. Emmett Walsh?
M. Emmett Walsh, who has played the old grizzled guy in tons of movies.
One of the most recognizable that guys we've got.
Right, as a that guy. He played the neighbor that was supposed to be Tim Allen's arch rival in the neighborhood, and he ends up giving him the cruise they were going to take, tickets for the cruise, to him and his wife, who's got cancer, as a feel-good Christmas miracle. Here, you have this. Never mind the fact none of this shit is transferable. You can't just give airline tickets and cruise tickets to two strangers at the last minute and say, here, enjoy this.
But what
they,
about the holiday spirit?
Right. Poor M. Emmett Walsh died in March of 24. So he died not that long ago.
Yeah, he was in the Packers movie, that Green and Gold movie. He was in Knives Out. He was in Blade Runner. I mean, the man's got a career to die for. Just
he was also
Slapshot, Airport, Fletch, Ordinary People, The Iron Giant.
Also, he was in the short-run HBO TV show called The Mind of the Married Man.
Oh yeah. And an early HBO show.
And he played the grizzled newspaper editor.
He could only play the grizzled is assumed with M. Emmett Walsh. Like
he had one of the great
That's like saying like the old Abe Vigoda role. Like, yeah, Abe Vigoda's playing old.
Yeah, one of the great sound bites, and I pulled it, and it's hard for me to find in my various hard drives and whatnot, but where he had to explain to the young guy, he goes, look, I'm going to teach you a lesson. Repeat after me. There is no such thing as free pussy. And the guy goes, what? He goes, repeat after me. Oh, there's no such thing as free pussy. He's like, that's right. It all has a price, my lad. You know, he's like, it's a tale as old as time. There's no such thing as, he made him repeat it. And I pulled it just because I'm a cynical.
That's some real M. Emmett Walsh stuff.
Right yeah. Okay. So on your canon list of Christmas content. Oh, by the way, so I watched Christmas of the Cranks. I watched Charlie Brown Christmas DVD, physical media. Do you know that?
I was going to say, because that is locked away on Apple TV.
It is. We have Apple TV. We could have watched it streaming, but we have a DVD of it. You know that there is a follow-up, there's a sequel to It's Christmas Time Again, Charlie Brown?
No.
Oh, yes. It's on the DVD, my friend. And it's not good. Does not.
Two Christmas, Two Furious.
Basically. Also, you should go to YouTube. There is about a 15 or 20 minute long explainer of how that special got made with some of the principles involved in making it. And it's amazing. I thought I talked about
that was pretty primitive. That's like 60s, right? When they made that.
Yeah. So they talked to the executives that were tasked with, they gave them like no time. They said, hey, we would like a Charlie Brown Christmas special for TV. Coca-Cola is sponsoring it. And we need it in 3 months. And the animators are like, well, we've never animated Charlie Brown or Snoopy or any of the Peanuts gang in anything other than a comic strip. How do we know how to bring them to life? What do we do? And so they did all these things that were very unconventional, such as they actually had child actors do the voices. And they sounded...
is so important to that.
It turned out to be. But they got pressure from the studio to go, hey, you should really hire some professional actors to do this because this
sounds...
And
Emmett Walsh is available.
They said, you know, this sounds crude and amateurish. But the net effect was it was heartwarming and endearing because you could tell they were kids voicing all this stuff.
It has a childhood wonder to it.
Right.
Still.
They enlisted the services of the Vince Guaraldi Trio, a jazz trio, to do the soundtrack, which sort of made no sense. But the director or the creative guy there said, no, this will work. This will be great. And they did all the stuff that was counterintuitive, including the final scene, which I'm going to play for in a second, of Linus reading from the Bible. They said, even though it's 1960-whatever, that was a
65,
bit,
I believe
that was a
out.
Bit controversial. They said to have an open Bible scripture read on network TV, even in 65, that was a little bit like, whoa, I don't know about this. But Charles Schulz said, it stays in, or you can cancel the whole thing. And they're like, okay, so we'll keep it in. Wow. So the whole thing, you know, when they finally got it together, slapped it together, they said that they probably would have canceled it, except they had put it on the schedule for the next week. They had finished the final cut a week before. It was already on the schedule. They were convinced. They're like, okay, this thing is going to flop so hard. And it played, and people said, awesome. We love this. It was a monster hit. And it ended up launching, Miller, all of the Peanuts spinoffs on TV.
It's Arbor Day, Charlie Brown, and the
Flag Day needs you, Charlie Brown.
It is funny because imagine the pitch for the Charlie Brown Christmas today. Like, imagine going to a studio, going to like NBC and being like, all right, here's the deal. It's a depressed kid on Christmas.
Right.
Are there going to be fun songs? Jazz music.
Jazz music.
There going to be other fun characters? Kind of. There's going to be a dog. He's going to be kind of fun. One of them's going to be Charlie's therapist, and they're going to be like, how depressed is this kid?
Right.
Like, it's just so funny. And like, you watch it now and you're like, this is incredible. Like, it's actually really funny. It's genuinely still funny to this day. And there is something soothing about watching it. It feels like a hot cup of cocoa.
Yeah, it really does. I'm going to play for you just a little snickerel of it right here. Okay. And then see what you think. Can you see that?
I can.
You can?
I can.
Pam or Pan?
Success.
It's in the TV guide logs. We got to put it on the air, but nice try. And, you know, we'll put it on once and that'll be it. So we figured it was over. It was done.
The show aired December 9, 1965. And much to our pleasant surprise, it just was an enormous success.
Merry Christmas, Charlie Brown!
It was the second most watched show that week, bested only by Bonanza, which was a very popular show at that time.
In those days, there were only three networks. And so we got a 49% share of audience, meaning that half of the television sets were on that show that night.
49, 50 shares, 35 ratings are numbers that are they're just unimaginable today.
The one thing I would love to have seen is the faces on the CBS executives who didn't like the Charlie Brown Christmas, that they got the overnight Nielsen ratings, and they suddenly realized that they had just put on the air the highest rated Christmas special in the history of civilization.
I had some questions as to how it would translate, you know, to television, but what do I know, you know, compared to Charles Schulz?
The way they measure success in television is that they order more episodes. And I think it was like a week or two after the Charlie Brown Christmas aired that Lee Mendelsohn walked out with the next 15 years of his life planned out in terms of specials.
So there you go, right? I very much worth your time to
the,
go find that.
The Christmas special market is so strange. Like that era of like everything getting Christmas specials on TV, and like obviously notoriously the Star Wars Christmas special, and like it's just so weird. Like it's just kind of an odd thing that to think about, especially in this modern times, that like a studio would just give away its, like they would just be like, yeah, make a Christmas special, we have a brand,
yeah,
put some of the characters together, some nice things about a holiday,
right,
and you filled an hour of airtime and we move on.
Yeah, so I also did, I resubscribed to Hulu at $17.99 because I didn't want the ads. And I'm going to try to cancel it if I can remember in a month, only because I had to watch the Family Guy special Road to the North Pole, which is a very dark but funny as hell Christmas adaptation of Family Guy. Did you ever see that?
I remember when it was on TV. I don't think I ever got to watch it.
Yeah.
But I know it was kind of a big deal.
Stewie gets stiffed by Santa at the mall because they got there a little bit late. And so he's like, all right, that's it. I'm going to the North Pole. I'm going to kill Santa Claus. That was his thing.
Yeah,
I'm going to kill Santa
right.
Claus. You know, they finally get it. They get to the North Pole. They find out that Santa is
I'm going to kill
dying.
The fat man.
Right, exactly. I'm going to take some selfies and then I'm going to kill him. Watch his blood drain out because he stiffed me. But no,
do you like that, Rudolph? Do you like it when I kill the fat man?
that's a great Stewie right there.
Thank you.
So,
a few skills.
So they get to the North Pole, they find out that Santa Claus is like dying of exhaustion because he can't make iPads in today's modern age. It's like, you know, we had elves that knew how to make trains and dolls and stuff. We can't make iPads here, and people are getting greedy. And so the elves had all turned into mutants because they were like crossbreeding them. And it was very dark. And then when...
Sounds like quite the demented program chose to watch.
It's Family Guy. You know,
That's true. The demented is implied.
So as Santa Claus is on his deathbed at the North Pole, Stewie and Brian set out on a sleigh to try to fill in for Santa on Christmas. It turns into effectively a home invasion and brutal beating of the mom and dad who came down and saw them in the house. And they were like, oh, what do we do now? Like, just everything went horribly wrong. So
sounds,
I'm twisted soul
like
in that.
Sweet, no, that sounds great. I know what my dad and I are going to be watching this upcoming
okay,
Christmas.
So you're probably like, wow, Zabe, you're really weird. You'll watch A Christmas Carol 1938 in black and white, and then you'll watch that and like it? And the answer is, yeah. You know what else I watched? I'm a sucker for holiday musical specials involving singers or artists or genres that I like. And a couple years ago, Apple TV had Hannah Waddingham host a holiday special.
Yeah,
she of Ted Lasso fame, and she played Olna Septa in Game of Thrones, the big evil nun.
She's randomly in the last Mission Impossible movie for 5 minutes.
Not only do I obsess about her being this statuesque, the big unit, platinum blonde, middle-aged smoke show with a great smile and a seemingly humble enough attitude that she doesn't come off as a bitch, she is also an incredible singer. You know why?
Mm-hmm.
Because her mom was in like the highest London Met Orchestra, you know, singing choir for her whole life. And she grew up watching her mom sing on stage. And so they said, here you go. Why don't you do a special? And she looked great in these holiday dresses. It was well done. The tunes were good. The set stage was wonderful. And I said, okay, I'll watch this. So that's it. I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I got 6 things I've watched so far this year. What have you watched so far?
That's a great collection. So we watched The Family Stone, which is an interesting movie, but it is, I don't understand the people who watch it every year for Christmas.
Starring this is, Claire Danes.
Claire Danes, Sarah Jessica Parker, the late, great Diane Keaton, Craig T. Nelson, I want to say too. Sarah Jessica Parker's coming home to Dermot Mulroney's house, and they're a couple, and she does not get along with the family. It is an unpleasant movie to watch.
It's very tense, like, because there's family tension, as there often
is. It's not a bad movie, because it is about the tension. It's supposed to be tense.
They lean into the tension.
These people who watch this every year is like a holiday classic. I'm just like, oh God, it's like an acid shower. Like, it's just everyone in the movie is just so pissy. It's just such a strange choice. We also watched the old animated The Snowman special. That one. I think that was on.
There's no dialogue.
I believe it is an entirely silent thing, other than like the singing and the song. It was, I think, like late 80s, early 90s.
We have that on DVD. I dragged it out of the cabinet. I go, oh, Snowman. All right.
It's very much a, like, it was funny watching it. And I was like, as a kid, I remember this being shorter. And as an adult, I'm like, wow, they really stretched this book out for 20 minutes. Wow. But it is very charming. It warms the heart and then breaks your heart. Because for those who don't know, the end of The Snowman is just, spoiler alert, the snowman dies. And the movie's like, and we're out. Merry Christmas.
And we're out. All right. I present to you in closing. Sorry, did I cut you off? What else have you watched?
Oh, I was just going to say we're going to do A Christmas Story as well, because that is the Miller family Christmas movie.
Okay.
We love it. It is the most quoted thing. I love it. It's never overplayed. That is my Mount Rushmore. That is all 4 heads on Mount Rushmore.
All right, I'm going to give you my smattering of the 6 best 1-minute clips or less. The nuclear 1-minute clips that define Christmas entertainment. And let's start with this classic Christmas Story at Santa Claus's chalet at the mall.
What do you want for Christmas, little boy?
My mind had gone blank. Frantically, I tried to remember what it was I wanted. I was blowing it.
Come on, kid. How about a nice football?
Football? Football? What's a football? Without conscious will, my voice squeaked out,
football. Okay, get him out of here.
A football? Oh, no. Okay, what was I doing? Wake up, stupid. Wake up. No.
No, I want an official red undercover and I shoot you in a chair with my laser rifle.
You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
You'll shoot your eye out.
Merry Christmas. Ho, ho, ho.
That's
the kid's smile in that moment when he says the Red Ryder carbine BB gun, and just the little shit-eating grin is just never. And you know what the funny thing is? That clip doesn't even include the funniest part of that scene.
Which is
the ho, 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 just like him menacingly hoeing at the I know some people don't like that movie, but for me that thing has never not aged. I love it.
Then we have this one. This is from Elf, which is continuing to rise in my heart as one of my all-time favorites every time I watch it. The scene where Will Ferrell's Elf character is called
Buddy the Elf.
Finds out that Santa Claus is coming to visit the department store the next day.
Wow! What's this?
This is the North Pole.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not. Where's the snow?
Why are you smiling like that?
I just like to smile. Smiling's my favorite.
Make work your favorite. That's your favorite, okay?
Okay.
Work is your new favorite.
Fine.
Time for the announcement.
Okay.
Okay, people, tomorrow morning, 10 a.m., Santa's coming to town.
Santa! Oh, my God! Santa here? I know him. I know him.
He'll be here to take pictures with all the children.
Yeah.
Just keep your receipts. 10 a.m. tomorrow.
10 a.m. tomorrow.
Santa's coming to town.
Yes.
Can you sign this for me?
Ooh.
It
Hi.
Really is a delightful Santa's movie. Coming.
Yeah. And Zooey Deschanel.
Could have gone so wrong, that movie. Like, Will Ferrell needs to be perfect in that role because grown adults acting like a child can be really annoying really fast.
Right.
And instead, he's so charming and he's so affable and you don't mind that he's ruining James Caan's life. And it's so perfect. The only thing that doesn't work for me is the Zooey Deschanel romance.
Okay. Yeah, it's a bit of a stretch.
It's a weird relationship.
Right. Then we have Clark Griswold and the Christmas Bonus.
What the hell do you want?
I have a delivery for Clark W. Griswold. I was supposed to deliver it yesterday, but it fell between the seats. I didn't see it. I'm sorry. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
I can't believe it.
What is it? A letter confirming your reservation at the Nut House?
It's from my company.
By the way, bonus. Beverly D'Angelo, total dime in that movie. Total suburban housewife dime.
Open it, Clarky. Open it.
Yeah, I hope it's a fortune, Clark.
That you do, Eddie. I was afraid. I'm sorry.
Are you going to bawl all over it, or are you going to open it?
Oh, I was going to wait till tomorrow to tell you all this, but what the heck? With this bonus check, I'm putting in a swimming pool.
That's it. That's the big one.
Open it.
By the way, how could Chevy Chase, Matt, become such a bitter asshole after pulling off a performance like this?
It's a shame that Chevy Chase... It's stunning, Chase,
right?
That, an unworkable human being.
Yeah, that the real Chevy Chase was so far away from this character that he channeled into. And you can say, well, it's acting, Zabe. Don't be an idiot. They're just playing characters. But it's got to be in him somewhere, right?
There's enough left over. I'm going to fly you all down here to help us dedicate it.
I can't swim, Clark.
I know that, Eddie.
I know that, Eddie.
Hey. Oh. Hey.
Clark, what's wrong? Honey? It's bigger than you expected? Smaller? What is it?
It's a 1-year membership in the Jelly of the Month Club.
Oh, God.
Clark, that's the gift that keeps on giving the whole year.
That's a line that gets repeated all the time.
That it is indeed.
I'm sorry. Clark,
this isn't the biggest bag over the head punch in the face I ever got. God damn it!
Son.
I love the way he just plunges the whole cup into
right
the eggnog.
Into the nog.
One gulp down. Let's do it again.
If any of you are looking for any last-minute gift ideas for me, I have one. I like Frank Shirley, my boss, right here tonight. I want him brought from his happy holiday slumber over there on Melody Lane with all the other rich people, and I want him brought right here.
with a big ribbon on his head. And I want to look him straight in the eye, and I want to tell him what a cheap, lying, no-good, rotten, four-flushing, low-life, snake-licking, dirt-eating, inbred, overstuffed, ignorant, blood-sucking, dog-kissing, brainless, dickless, hopeless, heartless, fat-ass, bug-eyed, stiff-legged, spotty-lipped, worm-headed sack of monkey shit he is. Hallelujah! Holy shit! Where's the Tylenol?
That line, holy shit, where's the Tylenol? Classic.
It's so good. And this is a weird lull in the Chevy Chase career. Because, like, Christmas Vacation, like, before this is Fletch Lives, massive bomb. Caddyshack 2, bomb. Massive Funny bomb. Farm. Bomb. Three Amigos, underperformer. Spies Like Us, underperformer. European Vacation doesn't do as well as they want it to. Like, the glory years of Chevy are behind him at this point, and the reputation is starting to get out there that Chevy is a pain in the ass to work with and that life is too short. Like, I think I think there's the story out there about the director Chris Columbus.
Yes.
That he was going to direct Christmas Vacation, and he met with Chevy Chase, and he was like, I cannot make this movie with this man. I can't do it. I won't do it.
Chevy agreed to meet with Columbus to talk about the script, and they sat there for almost, he said, an hour and a half as Columbus went through the script, talked about his vision for stuff. Chase didn't say a word. And finally, after an hour and a half of him talking, Chevy Chase simply said, oh, are you directing this movie? And the guy goes, yeah. And he said, I thought you were the piano player. And it's like, what an asshole.
Truly. And like, this isn't some nobody, Chris Columbus. Like, he would make Home Alone. He would make Harry Potter. Like, this
guy. Well, that's the thing. So he said that once he turned this down, Hughes, to his credit, realized, okay, I know Chevy Chase is a bit of an asshole, so no harm, no foul. I'll get somebody else to do it. But that gave Columbus Home Alone. So he hopped out of this into Home Alone, and his career took off.
And like, Chris Columbus at this point had, I believe he'd written Gremlins at this point. He'd written Goonies. Like, he was around. This guy was involved in Hollywood. And the guy who ended up directing Christmas Vacation did a great job there, but he doesn't do anything anymore. I think he directed The Avengers. No, not Marvel's The Avengers. The Uma Thurman, Ralph Fiennes, Sean Connery Avengers from 1998. Like, colossal bomb that no one speaks of. Like, that's the guy who was able to make a movie with Chevy Chase.
Going old school, we have White Christmas, which
is a classic. My wife's favorite.
Okay. It took me a while to warm up to this because so much of the movie is spent down in Florida and the long journey to get them all the way up to Vermont. Yeah.
And it's not a very plot-heavy movie. It's basically just like, what if some people were hanging out and it was Christmas?
Right. But this is the scene at the end with the general and his troops saving his little inn and singing all these wonderful classic show tunes of yesteryear. So it ends up with a speech by the general at the end, and, you know, kumbaya, everything is great. I actually did a deep dive into the Danny Kaye and
Bing Crosby
dynamic, and I found some fascinating nuggets. I can't recall them off the top of my head now, but I was, like, really curious about it. Danny Kaye was every bit as good as Bing Crosby. He just didn't get the same mainstream recognition.
Well, and Bing was such the singer, and he had that very distinct,
sure,
warm Bing Crosby voice. That movie is very, very charming. And I got to say, watching that clip, it's a podcast, so my apologies, no one's seeing it, but you forget how incredible sets are, like, oh, yeah, real sets, and yeah, you just watch that, and it's just people marching through, like, a dining hall, but just seeing this full set, beautifully lit, yes, like a crowd of people, and you're just, yes, like, man... We used to make movies with, like, people and sets, and yeah.
I know.
You watch that, and it just looks so good. And White Christmas is very excellent.
So my idea, and I'm sure it's a guaranteed money loser, but it would be cool to do it anyway, is recreate that resort somewhere up north and then stage a reproduction of that scene with those songs with men in uniform. So you could actually feel like you're living the final 20 minutes of White Christmas, and you pay money.
Strange that's not happening
for that. Right now, there might be some rights fees you have to get for that, but that can all be worked out. How cool would that be to say? Here's what we're doing:
fields and Field of Dreams, but we can't build a theater to do White Christmas.
Well, then it could still be a full resort near some ski place the rest of the year, but they have the most accurate down to the set replication of the final scene of White Christmas. And then they hold performances every night for most of December, pay money to come stay there and see it. I know your wife would
Kalahari
bug you to go.
On the other side, a Kalahari water park on one side, and then they have a really good theater that does the White Christmas.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. And then there is this when it comes to the next clip, the essential one-minute moments in the history of Christmas. That is It's a Wonderful Life, a movie that bombed when it first came out.
100%.
And only got popular when the copyright expired and networks could play it for free nonstop during the holidays, that people were like, this is a great movie. It's got some good, wholesome values to it.
It was a rights flub. It was whoever was supposed to, like, get it trademarked and through the thing forgot to sign the right papers. And the stations were like, well, we got some airtime to fill. And the movie's pretty good. It's Jimmy Stewart, Frank Capra. Come on, let's put it on TV.
What's that?
That's a Christmas present from a very dear friend of mine.
Gets his wings.
That's right. That's right.
Attaboy, Clarence.
Now, SNL did a very funny spinoff saying, what would the alternate ending to this movie be? And it was where the townspeople beat the shit out of the banker. Like, literally lined up and were just beating him next to 1 inch from death, basically.
In fairness, that would be a more satisfying ending. Like, this is a lovely, beautiful ending about the beauty of humanity,
right,
and community. But I would also like the version where the banker just gets the crap kicked out of him for a solid food. Like, it's the end of Death Proof.
Yes.
Like, just give me that.
And can we not give it up for Donna effing Reed, who played Mary Bailey? I mean, we're talking genuine, elite beauty. And played the great rock-solid rock star wife in times of trouble, defining the phrase, in sickness and in health, in good times and bad, right?
Absolutely. I will also say, too, Jimmy Stewart may be my favorite actor of all time.
Wow.
Like, I just love watching him act. I could watch him read a phone book. Like, I just love him in anything and everything.
More than Ernest Goes to Hollywood? Ernest Saves Christmas?
Yeah, I'm going to take Jimmy Stewart over. It's close. It's close.
Jim Varney playing Ernest P. Worrell. Old Jim Varney. Jim Varney or, you know, Jimmy Stewart. Jim Varney, Jimmy Stewart. It's close. Close.
Equally, listen, both angels of Hollywood. Both wonderful. it's just so... What is your number one then? What is your number one?
I got two that are next and they're animated. This is The Grinch.
The only good version of the Grinch.
Yes.
That's a noise, grinned the Grinch, that I simply must hear. He paused. And the Grinch put a hand to his ear. And he did hear a sound rising over the snow. It started in low. Then it started to grow.
The great Boris Karloff, your narrator of the original.
This sound wasn't sad.
The best.
Yes.
What? This sound sounded glad. Every who down in Whoville, the tall and the small, was singing. Without any presence at all. He hadn't stopped Christmas from coming. It came. Somehow or other, it came just the same.
I mean, classic, classic scene.
It's the it's so annoying to me that we've had so many new Grinch things since this original. I believe it's 1977 this came out.
Okay.
And this cleans the clock of all the other Grinches and is only like 25 minutes long. And it's so good. I know there's a lot of like people who love the Ron Howard live action one, the Jim Carrey one.
This was 66 it came out.
Oh, 66. Wow. Yeah, I don't get the love that people have for the Ron Howard one. It is such a manic, nasty looking movie. And did you read they did an interview with Jim Carrey about the experience? Absolutely nuts. He was like, yeah, so the costume was itchy as hell, and I had 10-inch long fingers, so I couldn't itch anything, and I couldn't do anything. I had these contacts that were, like, making my eyes hurt, and I couldn't see anything. Like, I was in a makeup chair for hours. He had to talk to, like, a CIA operative to learn
Navy,
torture.
Yes,
techniques.
A Navy SEAL who taught him ways to deal with torture in order to get through the makeup process. He said if he had known that it would be that involved, he would have said no to the movie. He said yes to the movie, not knowing how long it would take him in the makeup chair every time they shot a scene. Which tells you at that point, Jim Carrey really liked money. And he was hot.
I was going to say, and he
he's
made
like,
a lot.
Yes, I'll take it.
Highest grossing movie of that year, and obviously made some money this week. Like, that thing just keeps paying out to him. The residuals are nice. So
it was the highest grossing movie that year?
Of 2000, yeah.
Oh my God, that's kind of tragic, actually.
It actively is tragic. Right.
And then the number one most essential 60 seconds of all things Christmas is when Linus saved the entire Charlie Brown debacle with a reading from Book of Luke 2:8 through 2:12.
Anyone who knows what Christmas is all about?
Sure, Charlie Brown, I can tell you what Christmas is all about.
Oop, what do I do?
Lights, please.
It's quiet.
That's right. Sorry, I forgot it was quiet.
And there were the same country shepherds, abiding in the field, keeping watch over their flock by night. And lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them. And the glory of the Lord shone round about them. And they were sore afraid. And the angel said unto them, Fear not, for behold, I bring you tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord. And this shall be a sign unto you. Ye shall find the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger. And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly host praising God, and saying, Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward men.
Picks up blanket, exit stage left.
It's the good stuff.
That's what Christmas is all about, Charlie Brown.
I mean,
isn't there anyone?
I mean, that you know, I'm not even a very religious man, and that gets me every damn time, Matt Miller. Every damn maker. Time.
It's a verklempt maker.
It is. Okay.
I can't believe you didn't find a clip from Santa with Muscles starring Hulk Hogan.
No way.
The 1996 Christmas picture Santa with Muscles.
Yeah. People are going
to
say,
save that one for next year.
People are going to send in all kinds of, I bet you've never heard of this Christmas thing.
Oh, yeah. Santa Claus versus the Martians. I believe it's like a 1950s one just called Santa Claus, where like Santa Claus is battling like an evil red-faced Satan, and like he has like mechanical reindeer,
oh,
and he has like
my
a North Pole
God.
Filled with like all of the racist stereotypes. It's an incredible motion picture.
Oh,
nobody should
God.
Ever watch it. Santa Claus.
All right, I'm showing you right now on the video the music video of Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas, which has made her a gajillion dollars.
This has to be a new video, right? This is too fancy.
Well, I don't know when it was shot, but it looks awesome. And she looks awesome in a skin-tight Lululemon-style red Santa unibody suit. God love
her.
Yeah,
she was vacuum-sealed into that.
Exactly. Okay, Mr. Miller, we went way long today, but I enjoyed every minute of it, and I thank you for your time, my friend. And
this was wonderful.
Yeah, we will chat next time, all right, buddy?
Yeah, I'll talk to you post-Christmas.
Yeah, it sounds about right.
Yeah, sounds about right. Have a wonderful Christmas, Steve.
You have a wonderful Christmas.
You grumpy bastard.
You grumpy bastard with a heart of gold. It's under there. You just got to dig to find it. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We appreciate it. Rate and review to tickle the algorithmic overlords. And we will see you next time on the Zapecast. We might be in the final quarter of the football season, but that doesn't mean winning season is over. Oh no. With MyBookie and its cash out system, you are in control of how you bet and how you win for the rest of the season. Season win totals, parlays, points totals. If you're on the right side, you can get out while the getting is good. Cash out. Use the funds on other bets. Or just let it ride for the chance at a bigger payday. Any way you slice it, you are in control. To get started, go to mybookie.ag now. That's mybookie.ag. Register for an account for free. When you're ready, make your first deposit. And remember to use promo code ZABE. That's Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo. And grab a welcome bonus on the house. That's promo code ZABE to claim your deposit bonus. The season is running out, but winning season has just begun. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere at mybookie.ag.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.